God's grace and peace be with you. So the lectionary pickers are playing with the timeline a little bit. If you were here last Sunday, you did not hear a sermon. You had a wonderful hymn sing again. But the text for the day was the slaughter of the innocents. The text for the day is Herod's reaction to the story that we're reading this morning. Let me do a quick check. Can you all hear me okay? Is the mic? It's not up? It's low. There. Do you know how to turn up the sound on my mic? Is it better now? I'll just keep trying to project. I'm having a hard time getting it close enough to my mic. So, anyway, we have our chronology reversed. The story we hear this morning is the story that precipitated the events that were in the lesson last week. The story of Herod slaughtering all children under the age of 2 in Judah. The slaughter of the innocents. This is a complicated story, and it's a difficult one. And a lot of people were very happy not to have to preach last Sunday, but to be on vacation and have supply pastors deal with this difficult truth. Now, again, understanding everything that's happening here takes a little bit of work. So first of all, I'm just going to say, how many of you were here at the 4 o'clock service on Christmas Eve? Ooh, a good hand. Anybody remember who the wise men are? It was in that wonderful rhyming text, but may have slid past. Probably Zoroastrian priests from Iran. Zoroastrian priests, probably, from probably Iran. I don't know. That feels like it's like, you know, real life events happening again with all of this political intrigue with the ruler of Jerusalem and these people from Iran coming in and all of the things that happen. Life continues to be life, doesn't it? So these Zoroastrian priests who have a real global perspective come to find this child whose sign they have seen in the skies. And again, there's one theory that they saw a planetary conjunction that moved from the house of Leo into the part of the sky, into the lion, or it moved from one place to another that indicated a king in Israel. So there was a planetary conjunction connected with the zodiac that they would have set out. And they come following this sign. And you'll notice they have a sign, but it doesn't lead them exactly, because they end up in Jerusalem first. Now, maybe it's just because Jerusalem was so big. Maybe it's because Jerusalem was the seat of power. Maybe it's because they just assumed that's where they needed to go to worship a king. You'd go to Jerusalem. And so they come to Herod, but you'll notice they don't bow down to Herod. They say, so where's this child? And Herod doesn't know what the prophecy is supposed to be. He doesn't know what the holy word says about Israel's hopes. He has to go to his own wise people to consult the scriptures for him to tell him what the prophets say about this. And so then he learns that it's supposed to be in Bethlehem. Now the Magi, did I mention Zoroastrian priests from Persia, which is now Iran? They are not beholden to Herod. They're not beholden to Rome. They could care less, really, about either one. And they don't pay any homage to Herod, and they don't pay any homage to Rome. They don't pay homage to the seats of power. None at all. But they look for the point of the sign that they follow. And it's in this tiny little podunk village. And without question, that's where they head off. Now, you know this story. You know the irony of this, that the one to whom the foreigners come to pay homage is in a small village, in a poor little house, unremarked by everyone at this point. Not Jerusalem, not Herod, not Rome, none of the obvious places, but they come to pay homage in Bethlehem, and they kneel down. So, what does it mean to pay homage. What does it mean to pay homage? It means to worship. And see, Matthew, again, is not just saying, oh, this is an interesting detail. I think I'll put in the fact that they went to Herod first. Matthew is intentional about every part of the story that he includes. And Matthew wants us to notice. He wants us to notice that Jerusalem or Rome are not the focus of worship, but it is the child born in Bethlehem. To pay homage is to worship. And even the foreigners know that Jerusalem isn't the point, and the Roman presence and the Pax Romana isn't the point. But the child in Bethlehem, that's the point. And so they worship. Now that's another interesting question. What's worship? What does it mean to worship? Does it mean come to church and see your friends and put in your tithe and get communion and head out into the week refreshed? No. Magi worshiped and they weren't part of a church. What does it mean to worship? And I hadn't thought about that question until one of the scholars that I always research raised it and pointed out that the meaning of worship, to worship is to reorient God to the center of your life. To worship is to make God the focus, make God the center. To worship is to place that which you worship as the most important thing. So the Magi come to Jesus and worship. He's not their God, but they come to him and they worship. And Matthew makes very, very, very sure that we hear this truth, that it's not Rome, it's not the oppressors who hold people in fear that we have to worship, and it's not the obvious seats of power that we worship, but it is God's Son sent to us, Jesus, that we worship. And so as we head out on this year's journey of discipleship, right? This year is a whole journey that started in Advent. We've been waiting for the revelation. We've seen the revelation at Christmas, and now that revelation is going to be expanded and carried out by those who worship. Discipleship starts with worship, because worship is that time when we remember and place God at the very center. Not the end of the week, not the beginning of the week, not part of the week, but the center of everything. And it's not because God's ego is so weak that God needs constant attention. But it is because this is where our hope is found. And we carry this hope as we worship and then move out from worship with that hope still within us. And it's not the obvious hope. Again, I mentioned on Christmas Eve, this is God in the small spaces of our lives. Spaces that sometimes look lonely or cold or desolate or unimportant or unremarked and unnoticed. God is in the small spaces of our lives. But God isn't going to stay there, because this word of hope moves out and it encompasses the whole world and it connects us to everything and everyone who is or ever has been. These Magi, they are our brothers. These Zoroastrian priests from Persia 2,000 years ago share a journey with us. God has given them to us and us to them because of this child in Bethlehem who comes to restore all brokenness, all hopelessness, all suffering and grief and death, Jesus comes to heal. In this small and hope-filled space. And so 2,000 years later, that little child is still so powerful that you and I are here to worship. And we're here to worship because, like everyone else, we need to remember to return God to the center of who we are and everything we are as individuals walking through your lives today and as a church, to be the body of Christ with only Jesus at the center. So we worship and we give thanks to God because God has done this for us. Thanks be to God.